taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you were every day American.
Hello there, everyday Americans. Welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. Glad you could join me today. Today I want to take a look at federalism. You know, federalism is one of those terms that's used a lot. I don't think it's understood. I don't think people have the background, the understanding of what federalism is, what it means, and why it is so important to the United States, to the republic that we've created. So let's take a look at this article I wrote talking about federalism.
Why do we call the government of the United States the federal government when the Constitution doesn't refer to it that way? What is this idea of federalism, and why is it important to the health of the republic? And how can you use federalism to protect your rights? Well, the idea of federalism is not new in the United States. The convention to draft the Constitution was called the Federal Convention in its own records. Although the term federal was not used, the Articles of Confederation and the Lee Resolution that the colonies used to declare independence included plans for the new states to work together. Quote, that a plan of confederation be prepared and transmitted to the respective colonies for their consideration and approbation. According to Noah Webster in his 1828 dictionary, a confederation is an alliance, a collection of entities, to unite in a league or to join in a mutual contract or covenant. The newly independent states confederated together on November 15, 1777, when they joined the Articles of Confederation. So what is this federalism I've been talking about? Well, again, Noah Webster defined federal as, quote, consisting in a compact between parties, particularly and chiefly between states and nations, founded on alliance by contract or mutual agreement as a federal government, such as of the United States. Federalism is the idea of several entities, mostly states and nations, that join together under a compact, a fancy name for a contract. In America, federalism is the support of the compact that is the Constitution. The Constitution not only created a new union, it also created a new government for the United States of America, delegating to it limited powers. At the beginning of the Republic, there was even a political faction known as the Federalists, those who supported the new Constitution and the powers delegated to the new central government. The 10th Amendment confirmed what many Federalists understood about the Constitution, that while power was distributed between the states and the new government, those powers did not overlap. The 10th Amendment states, quote, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. That means today a Federalist would be someone who supports the Constitution, not only recognizing the legal limitations it places on the government of the United States, but the powers of the parties to that compact, the several states. While many in America have adopted the idea of federal supremacy over that of federalism, there are some in the states looking to restore the compact and the balance of powers the Constitution established. There's been a growing number of state legislatures considering bills that push back against federal overreach. Montana and Idaho have considered legislation to review presidential executive orders. Arkansas is standing up against Biden and his Department of Education's push to have biological men compete against women in sports. Governors, legislatures, and even sheriffs in Texas, Wyoming, and Arizona are acting to ban enforcement of federal gun control measures. And let's not forget the sanctuary state movements in California, Arkansas, and Oklahoma. Many claim that these states are pushing for anarchy when what they're doing is upholding the supreme law of the land. As the 10th Amendment states, any power not specifically delegated to the United States in the Constitution generally remains with the states. When those in the federal government exercise powers not delegated to them, they are stealing power from the states. So it's quite right for the states to assert themselves to retain their power. But doesn't the Constitution say that federal law is supreme? Well, Article 6, Clause 2 states, quote, This Constitution and the laws of the United States which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in any constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. See, only the laws of the United States made in pursuance to the Constitution are supreme. So when Congress enacts a law that is not within their delegated powers, it's not supreme. Now, according to Alexander Hamilton in Federalist Paper No. 78, quote, "There is no position which depends on clearer principles than that every act of a delegated authority, contrary to the tenor of the commission under which it is exercised, is void. No legislative act, therefore, contrary to the Constitution, can be valid. To deny this would be to affirm that the deputy is greater than the principal, that the servant is above his master, that the representatives of the people are superior to the people themselves, that men, acting by virtue of powers, may do not only what their powers do not authorize, but what they forbid." The idea that a delegated authority could act contrary to their commission is so absurd, Alexander Hamilton compared it to putting a servant above their master. Rather like those in public service, ruling as masters of the people they are supposed to serve. And Mr. Hamilton doesn't just say these acts are wrong, but that they are void, empty, and having no legal force. This is not simply the opinion of one of our founding fathers. Even the Supreme Court recognized in 1803 Marbury versus Madison case the supremacy of the Constitution over the acts of the legislature. Quote, "Certainly, all those who have framed written constitutions contemplate them as forming the fundamental and paramount law of the nation, and consequently the theory of such government must be that an act of the legislature repugnant to the Constitution is void. What is true for Congress is just as true for the rest of government. When the president signs an executive order that does anything but direct the executive branch to follow the laws made pursuant to the Constitution, he is acting contrary to his commission in the Constitution of the United States. And since those on the federal courts are bound by the same Constitution, when they ignore its language, their opinion is just as void as the acts of the other two branches. The Constitution does not delegate to the United States the power to define, much less redefine, what it means. That power remains with the states. As part of the Constitution, only the states have the legal authority to define or change the Constitution. That's why the Constitution can only be amended by the ratification of 3/4 of the states. So when a leader in Congress dismisses the restrictions placed on them by the Constitution, when a president says that the amendments are not absolute, or when a federal court finds in a way contrary to the language of the Constitution, their actions are void. It's not anarchy or disobedience for states to assume their rightful powers within the republic. It is their duty. Article 6, Clause 3 of the Constitution reads, quote, "The senators and representatives before mentioned, and the members of the several state legislatures, and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. But no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification for any office or public trust under the United States." When your state representative and senator, your governor, or even your state judges take their office, they must swear or affirm in their oath of office to support the Constitution of the United States of America. That includes the Supremacy Clause in Article 6, Clause 2, and the 10th Amendment. They have sworn or affirmed to only recognize the laws of the United States made in pursuance of the Constitution, and to limit the powers of the federal government to those delegated by that same Constitution. So when state government officials stand up against federal acts which are void, they are not promoting anarchy. They are performing the duty they swore or affirmed when they took office to support the Constitution of the United States. The Declaration of Independence states, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed." While some people see federalism as a dirty word, it is an important part of the American Republic. It's the states defending their rights and powers as guaranteed by the Constitution. It's the role of the states as a check and balance against the federal power. and it's the protection of your right to consent to the powers of government. As the states have succumbed to federal bribery and abdicated not only their powers, but their duty to protect their citizens, the federal government has grown into the behemoth we see today. Are there things in this modern world that should be done at a national level that are not authorized by the Constitution? Probably. But that is not an excuse for ignoring the supreme law of the land, allowing the rights of the people to be infringed, and allowing the federal government to exercise powers not consented to by the people. If the American people are to return to their rightful position as masters of their governments, it will not begin in Washington, D.C. It won't even begin in our state houses. It will begin with people exercising their consent at the county and city level. Then, when they have regained control of local government, we can begin to restore the states to their rightful place as masters of the federal government. Until that time, this experiment in self-government that has been entrusted into our hands will be viewed as a failure.
Many, both in government and in the population today, forget the fact that the federal government is a creation of the Constitution. It's a creation of the states. The states created the federal government and they set its boundaries. We the people, through our states, set the boundaries in the federal government. And when it does not remain within its established boundaries, our first protection is the states. In a veto message that James Madison wrote, paraphrasing, he said, the best way to protect the Constitution is to maintain the separation of powers between the federal and the state legislatures. So when I see states, and I've got a whole list of them, I mentioned some of them already, but when I go into and I look at, you know, Montana, Arizona, Arkansas, Texas, Utah, all passing bills or working on legislation to, the term is often used, nullify federal gun control law. Oh, but Paul, nullification is anarchy. No, nullification is not anarchy. The Constitution of the United States says that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So when the federal government attempts to infringe these rights, it is not only the right, it's the duty of the states to stand up. I think I misspoke. Montana, actually, they are working on a law that would allow them to review and reject presidential executive orders. I love it because so many of the, you know, we have presidents that rule by executive order, which is unconstitutional. It is illegal. Well, how do you stop it? The courts aren't stopping it. So it's up to the states to go to their creation and say, no, that's gone too far. You can't do that. We won't let that happen in our own state. A state can't order another state to do that, but within their own state, they can say no. And what's interesting is, as I've read through some of these bills, there are the vast majority of them simply state that no state agent and no state funds will be used to support or exercise either an illegal federal law or an executive order, which is, it's a step, right? I give these states credit. It is a step in the right direction. It needs to go beyond that. Why? Because Article 6, Clause 2 of the Constitution says it's the supreme law of the land. So if, let's say, someone comes to you and asks for your assistance in committing a crime. It's one thing to say, no, I'm not going to help you. But it's quite another to then call law enforcement and say, listen, I know there's a crime that's happening. Now, I know in the current climate, states are terrified. What are we supposed to do? So I remember back in 2013, Kansas passed their Second Amendment Protection Act. I forget what the actual title of the bill was. And I remember Governor Brownback making a big deal of, yes, we will not only will enforce it, but any firearm accessory that is made in Kansas, sold in Kansas, and remains in Kansas is not subject to the National Firearms Act. Any federal officer who tries to enforce that illegal act will be arrested under Kansas law and tried. And it sounded great. Oh, cheers all around. Until the first time the feds showed up. You see, these two Kansas residents, one made a suppressor, the other and sold it to another one. According to Governor Brownback and according to the legislation, they were protected by the Kansas Second Amendment Protection Act. According to the governor, when ATF showed up to arrest these two gentlemen, Kansas law enforcement was supposed to take those officers into custody. They didn't. In fact, Kansas never stood up for their citizens one bit. They folded like a cheap suit. Governor Brownback was all bark and no bite. And I understand, right? Because first of all, we have politicians and lawyers who've had it drummed into their heads that they are subjects of the federal government. That whatever the federal government says is supreme over absolutely everything. That is a lie. That is not what the Constitution says. But we also have states that have become dependent on federal money. They've accepted the federal bribe so much that they're now dependent on it. And like an addict, they haven't hit the point where they're ready to kick the habit. That's right. I compared our state governments to drug addicts. And the drug is federal money. So this is a step in the right direction. And I take these and I these states and I praise them for that step. But then I ask them to take the next step. Step one is we will not participate in the crime. Step two is we will not allow the crime to happen within our borders. That's what I want to see. You know, we see all these cheers and wonderful, and aren't they doing great things? It's a step. I am mildly optimistic. Because, again, it's one thing to say, well, law enforcement or federal agents are not going to help. That's a passive. It's not even a protection of rights. It simply says we're not going to participate in the crime, which is a good thing. I'd much rather the states not participate in the crime than participate in the crime. But since governments are instituted among men deriving to protect the rights of the people, and they derive their just power from the consent of the government, isn't it the duty of the state governments to protect the rights of their citizens, not only against their own encroachment, but the encroachment of the federal government? That is what federalism is all about. It is the ability, it is the separation of powers and the ability of the states to act as a check on federal government acting inside their borders beyond their authorization in the Constitution. So that's federalism. I like the fact that, like I said, Montana is trying to pass legislation so they will look at an executive order and say, hey, President, do you actually have the authority to do what you just did? Because a lot of it doesn't. And if you live in Arizona, Arkansas, Texas, we got Utah. Talk to your representatives. Find out how far this bill goes. And then once they pass it, encourage them to take the next step. But it's not just firearms. Firearms seems to be, you know, the Second Amendment. It's a big deal among a lot of people who are interested in rights in the Constitution. But that's not the only sticking point. The legislature of the state of Washington has sent a bill to the governor that, among other things, is trying to limit the federal militarization of the police. The federal government has programs where they take military equipment and they make it available to the state law enforcement. Now, understand, there's a lot of things that are referred to as military equipment. But, you know, 50 caliber firearms, machine guns, armed helicopters, armored drones, armed vessels, armed vehicles, armed aircraft, tanks. rockets and rocket launchers, grenades, missiles. There's a lot of these things that are being made available. And the state of Washington, the legislature says, you know what? Maybe we don't want to turn our law enforcement into the equivalent of the Redcoats, into an armed occupying force. And to me, that's a good thing. Because one of the ideas that has been lost over the ages is the proper role of the different levels of government. James Madison wrote in Federalist Paper number 45, quote, "The powers delegated by the proposed Constitution to the federal government are few and defined. Those which are to remain in the state governments are numerous and indefinite. The former will be exercised principally on external objects, as war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce, with which the last power of taxation will, for the most part, be connected. The powers reserved to the several states will extend to all the objects which, in the ordinary course of affairs, concern the lives, liberties, and properties of the people in the internal order, improvement, and prosperity of the state." In other words, the purpose, the role of the federal government is not to run our lives. It's to deal with foreign issues, external objects, war, peace, foreign commerce. That is the purpose of the federal government. That's also the limitation of what it should be taxing for. It is the states that are in charge of our internal improvements. It is the states that are in charge of internal order, prosperity, protecting our liberty, our lives. And that's been lost. We focus everything on the federal government nowadays. And by doing that, our rights have continue to dwindle. So this idea of federalism, it's not some esoteric issue. It is not it's not something that just wonks deal with. It truly is the protection of your rights, your livelihood, your safety, your order. All of that is the role of the state, not the federal government. And when the federal government tries to put its one-size-fits-all answer to the 50 different questions that exist throughout this nation, they don't make things better. They make things worse. So if we stop to think about it, federalism, states' rights, nullification, these are all part of that check and balance. You know, we were taught in school that we have three branches of government to check and balance against each other. But we've got three tiers of government. The federal government is designed to focus on external things, to protect us from foreign invasion, to negotiate with foreign entities. The states are to run their day-to-day internal operations, but they're also there to protect us from a federal government reaching internally where it does not belong, to exercise powers it does not legally have. And then we've also got our county governments, which are there to not only deal with the minutia of the local area, but to protect us from infringements from state and federal governments. That's why the county sheriff is so important. He or she is elected by the people. They are the chief law enforcement officer of the county. They have the power to arrest state and federal actors that violate the law. It's one of the reasons why knowing your sheriff is so important, and it's one of the reasons why I say we not only meet and know our sheriffs, but if they're doing a good job, when they're protecting the rights of their citizens, we should be supporting them as well. I don't mean donating to campaigns. I mean standing with them and supporting them when they are under attack for protecting the rights and upholding their oath to support the Constitution of the United States. Now, I have more articles, more information about states using federalism to protect their rights and to protect your rights. But that will have to wait till after the break. But before we go, please check out America Out Loud Talk Radio. You can also find us on iHeartRadio Network. You can listen on our media player, on your web browser, and in the world, We have some best-in-class apps. You can find us on Apple, Android, and Alexa 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now you can be in the know. You can even listen to these programs as podcasts from those same apps. So please check it out. Go to AmericaOutloud.com. Find the app. Find the iHeartRadio app. Find not only the Constitution Study, but the other great programs available on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. And please join me right after this break.
Now, never before in our history have we witnessed the level of hatred that is now being waged against our law enforcement. While anarchist groups create havoc and overwhelm our first responders, these same groups and their corporate supporters are calling for the police forces to be shrunk and defunded. What can you and I do to make a difference? How can we stand up for what is right and to show our support? That's what I'm going to tell you about this incredible new platform. It's called ShopToTheRight.com. And it's a new shopping platform that will help you find businesses that align with your values. They feature products made in America. They support veteran-owned businesses as well as our law enforcement community. This is a time when we need to stick together. We need to shop together, and we need to support each other. It's time for you and I to make some noise and stand up to protect our country. And one easy way to do that is to shop and give our money to companies that don't seek to destroy our way of life. So join the fight for liberty. ShopToTheRight.com. Support those American businesses that support law enforcement and veterans.
It was a vision that gave birth to a unique multimedia platform that would combine classic talk radio, great writers, and memorable podcasts and videos. AmericaOutloud.com is a conservative leader in a field that is predominantly run by far-left progressive globalists. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. Thanks for coming back to the Constitution Study. We are talking today about federalism. And I think in many ways, well, at least in its creation, America was unique. America, I believe, was the first country that was made up where a group of other countries joined together and created a central government that was subservient to the states, subservient to the components. And there are examples in recent history of nation states joining together in unions. I think of the Russian Federation. I think of the EU. There may be others, but I can't think of them off the top of my head. But in all of these, the central government was created to rule over the constituent governments. In other words, the countries in the EU, in the European Union, must take orders from the central government, the EU government in Brussels. And there is not the same separation of powers. It's one of the reasons why Great Britain left. Why they removed themselves from the EU, because their sovereignty had been compromised. Now, if you think of the Russian Federation, that really was less a union as an attempt to recreate something similar to the Soviet Union, but without without communism, and it didn't last all that long. It had its issues, but according to the law, the states still rule over the federal government. They don't exercise it. This idea of federalism is not contrary to the Constitution. It is the fulfillment of the Constitution. It is the fulfillment of the 10th Amendment. It is the fulfillment of the compact, the understanding that the states, the people of the states, through their states, created a central government with limited and defined powers, and that government will not remain within those boundaries. It is the right and the duty of the states to stand up to them. So I found this article about, we got lawmakers in Washington, big surprise, they introduce a bill to help state and local governments address cyber attacks. Excuse me, but the Constitution does not give the federal government the authority to help states deal with cyber attacks. And it certainly doesn't have the power to bribe them with cash. Yet, see, the bill would have it create a $500 million grant program to bribe the states and local governments into bolstering their computer networks. I say bribe for a reason. You see, the main sway that the main way the federal government has gotten control over the states has been through bribery, through offering of money, and then the threat of withdrawing that money if states don't comply. This is just another example. Is your state going to accept the bribe? Now, again, states, local governments, they should protect their networks against cyber attack. I spent 30 years in IT. I worked in data centers for 25 years. I am very familiar with protecting networks against and entire systems against different cyber attacks. But that doesn't make it a federal duty. So this bill is once again a violation of the law, and every member of Congress who supports it is violating their oath of office, because it is not the job of the federal government to provide funds for the state to do what the state is supposed to do. Now, there's a situation, and again, where federalism should stand up and say, no, you do not, federal government, you're not authorized to do that. That is a crime. But looking through the news recently, we have, we find that there's an opposition. There are people that are not real happy with the Department of Education, supported by its leader, dear leader, Joe Biden, proposing a rule to use the 1619 Project as a guide for federal grant criteria. Now, here we go. Here's the bribe, right? The federal government has spent years going, yes, we will give states money for education. Why? Because education is important. Is it legal? Who cares? Education's important. We'll spend money on it. Now, the federal government says, you know that 1619 Project, you know the one that's been debunked as historically inaccurate and basically historian malpractice, the lie that America was formed in 1619, the lie that it was formed based on slavery, the lie that America is systemically racist because the revolution was in order to maintain slavery. The lies and lies. And now the federal government is going to say, listen, if you don't want to teach that, you don't get the money we promised. That's the stick. The carrot is do what we want, we'll give you money. The stick is don't do what we want, and we take the money away. So, two questions. First, does your state accept federal education money? Because the U.S. Department of Education is an illegal agency. Find me any place in the Constitution where the federal government is authorized to involve itself in education. Nowhere. So the DOE, the U.S. Department of Education, is illegal. Every dime spent on the Department of Education is a crime. It is theft. Now, I don't say in general taxation is theft, but when you tax people to spend money you're not legally allowed to spend, that is theft. And now that stolen money is being used to bribe your states to get your schools to indoctrinate your children with racism, with the false information that America was founded in 1619, with the false information that the Revolutionary War was fought to maintain slavery, when many of the states actually tried to eliminate slavery and were forbidden by British law. And if you don't teach it, if your schools don't teach it, the feds say they're going to cut off the taps. So is your state accepting the bribery? And the second question is, why? Why are you accepting bribes to teach lies to your children? And if your representative is supporting of this, why are they still there? If they will violate their oath of office and allow the federal government to spend money it's not allowed to spend, we're the state, we can't stop them. You don't have to take it. You don't have to take it. In fact, you can even go so far as to file a lawsuit and say, listen, the federal government doesn't have the authority to dictate educational policies. That is a crime. I'd love to see a couple state legislators call the FBI and file a complaint under 18 U.S.C. 242 for members of the Department of Education that are attempting to deprive the state of the right to exercise control over their domestic affairs, to follow the will of their people, their residents, their citizens, not be intimidated, bribed, and coerced, and threatened by an illegal department of the federal government. I saw another one. Iowa governor signed a law saying, you know what? Landlords, if you don't want to accept Section 8 housing, you don't have to. Another bribe. See, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Tell me, where in the Constitution does the federal government have the authority to do anything with housing or urban development outside of Washington, D.C. and forts? Yep, you, military bases, you can do all the stuff on housing that you want on military bases. Urban development, Washington, D.C., be my guest. Anything else is a crime, is a violation of the Constitution, is a deprivation of rights under color of law. Therefore, it's a violation of 18 U.S.C. 242. It is a federal crime. So we have Iowa saying, you know what? No. You cannot force landlords in our state to accept Section 8 housing vouchers. Those are illegal. That's theft. That's bribery. And you can't make us do it. Now, I haven't read the law. I hope that the law, I assume the law simply says, listen, you can't make us do it. I hope they put some penalties on any federal agent that attempts to intimidate, coerce, or force landlords to accept those housing vouchers. It's one thing not to participate. It's another thing to let the crime happen while you stand by and do nothing. So there we have the federal government trying to coerce education. We have Iowa standing up and saying, no, we're not going to do Section 8 housing. But then we go to Columbus, Ohio, and we have the mayor of Columbus, Ohio, asking the feds to come investigate his police force. I have a lot of things I think about this particular mayor. None of them are good. Why in God's name are you looking for the feds to investigate your police force? Now, if you think your police force has problems and you think that they're sweeping things under the rug, why not go to your state? They're the ones responsible for domestic issues, not the feds. The feds have absolutely zero say in police matters, except the instances where law enforcement officers violate the federal constitution. But we don't care anymore. And just to make this even more obnoxious, even more cravenly, cowardly, wimpy, why is Mayor Ginther want the feds to probe the police force? Because one of his police officers saved the life of a black girl. A white police officer saved the life of a black girl. And for that, he wants his police department investigated. You cowardly, craven. Mm. You're telling me the mayor would have been much happier to have the police officer stand back and let that girl be stabbed to death than have him defend her with a force equal to the force that was being used to threaten the life of that young girl. This is disgusting. This is cravenly. And people of Columbus, Ohio, this is your fault. You elected this bozo. If you think that saving that a white man, a white police officer saving the life of a black girl is a bad thing, you are racist. And I'm embarrassed to think that you call yourself an American, that you claim to be for liberty and freedom, but you're not interested in liberty and freedom for the poor victim. Not Micaiah Bryant. She wasn't the victim. She was the aggressor. She was the attacker. She was the alleged criminal. But you know what? You never see the name of the girl that this officer saved. But the point I wanted to bring up today is, why is this craven coward going to the feds because he thinks there's a problem with his police officer? And of course, he's not alone. There's apparently a whole coalition of people asking the Department of Justice to investigate the Columbus police force. Why? Because a police officer saved the life of a young black girl? And why the feds? Have they talked to the state? Has there been a state investigation? Have they found any problems with a state investigation? Has there been any malfeasance? Have they ignored evidence? No. But they've been brainwashed with the idea that everything is a federal issue. This is not a federal issue. This is an issue of Columbus, Ohio, and the state of Ohio hiring infantile cowards unwilling to follow their oath of office. I'm disgusted by Columbus, Ohio, by the citizens that hired these buffoons that wish to be subjects of an all-powerful federal oligarchy rather than protecting the life of an apparently innocent black woman. You racist thugs. Let's see, what's next? Oh, of course, then we have the Biden policy. Biden decided by executive order. So we're going to just forget laws. Laws become unimportant when certain presidents want to do something. And he's going to redefine the word sex. Sex is no longer the biological component of your body. Sex is whatever you feel like that day. Excuse me? And as if that isn't bad enough, what's Biden doing? He is pushing this on the states. So it's not bad enough that his twisted mind thinks we should put a person's delusion ahead of the facts and reality. But he wants to push this on the states. And you know what? There are people that are starting to push back. There are people that are looking at this saying, you know what? No. First of all, the president has no authority to rewrite federal law. I believe it's Title IX is federal law. It says sex. It doesn't say sexual orientation. It doesn't say gender identity. It says sex. Period. Anybody in the federal government should ignore Biden's order. And if you can't ignore it, then you should leave. Because you can't simply redefine legislation and then to take that and apply it to the states, to say that states must ignore reality because Biden feels like it. So that's what happens when federalism breaks down. When the states abdicate their responsibility to protect the rights of their citizens, even against the federal government. This has consequences. College of the Ozarks right now is in federal court challenging that executive order because it requires them to open women's dorm bathrooms and showers to guys. But I think I'm a woman today. I don't care. If you look like a guy, if you got guy parts, if you've got dye DNA, you're a guy. And just because you want to go into the women's restroom or the women's shower, what about the rights of the women there? Why should one confused individual be able to override the rights of all the other women there? See, remember, when we're talking about rights, there's two sentences you have to remember. To legitimately exercise a right, it must not infringe on the rights of another. So if you're telling me that a confused person has the right to infringe on the rights of women to have sex-segregated bathrooms, sex-segregated showers, which have been the case through as long as I can remember, that's not all created equal. This is a sick and twisted view of the world, and it's time the states to stand up. Now, the College of the Ozarks is challenged this in federal court. Where is the state? Ask me. Tell me, where is the state standing up and saying, no, you cannot force a Christian college to house men with women just because you can't tell the difference in your twisted logic? No. Federal government, you have no authority over college housing. Zero. None. Nada. This is a criminal act. Why are the states not standing up? Why are they hoping that a federal government agency will come to their rescue? Federal courts are a federal government agency, and yes, they have the right to petition the government for a redress of grievance. I don't disagree with them suing. I want to know where the state is protecting them. Because it appears the state has abdicated its responsibility to protect its citizens. They are buckling down to a tyrant when they have all the power they need to simply say, no. No, we will not listen to your lies. We will not let you rewrite law on a whim. We will not allow you to violate the Constitution. And if you come here and try, we will oppose you. And if necessary, we will do so with force. I'm not talking about shooting in the streets. I'm talking about simple. If you have a federal government that comes in here and tries to make this college deny its religious freedom to do something that's against its conscience, I want the state officer, state law enforcement officer, to arrest these people. They are breaking the law. They can arrest them under state law, and then they can call the FBI and ask them to be charged under 18 U.S.C. 242. Because they're depriving the college and its students of the ability to assemble in the way they wish, of living out, of exercising their religion. That's a violation of the law. It's about time we stop standing for it. Now, Some of the instances we've talked about, the state has asked the federal government to do what is not legally allowed to do. We have the citizens trying to get a protection of redress because the states aren't standing up. But in many cases, we have the federal government ignoring federalism and ignoring the limitations on their power. The Department of Justice has asked Congress for funding to fight domestic terrorism, quote, gender crimes, and systemic racism. Okay. There's nothing in the Constitution about gender crimes. Doesn't exist. Now, there is stuff about racism, but guess what? Except there be a specific violation of the Constitution, the Department of Justice has zero authority to tell the states how to live, how to do things, until the states actually violate the Constitution. So let's feed more money to the beast. Let's give the government more money to impose on states their mythical confusion that men are women and women are men. And the states, how many states are just going to, they're just going to buckle down, buckle under. Okay, yeah, yeah, whatever you want. We don't have to protect our citizens. We'll let the feds do it. Or we'll let the feds pay us to do it. We will let the feds commit gender crimes. That's what they're doing. Biden's order is a gender crime. We'll let them do it. We'll give them money to do it. We'll give them money to take away your rights. It is government, and especially the federal government, that is creating systemic racism. Why? Because they are passing laws that judge people based on the color of their skin. You must teach critical race theory. That's racist. You must teach the 1619 Project. That's racist. And they want money to do it. So not only does Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 not give them the authority to spend money on this stuff, so they're going to steal money from the American people to infringe on our rights and break the law. Where are the states standing up and saying, no, we didn't authorize you to do that? And until we authorize you to do that, it is criminal for you to do that. And I keep harping, it's criminal. This is these are crimes being committed. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land. They're violations of the law. They are crimes. They are depriving people of their rights under color of law. That's a federal crime. Why aren't we doing anything about it? And then last one today. That same Department of Justice that wants money, that's asking for money to infringe on your rights to do things they're not legally authorized to do, now they're concerned about ballot security in the Maricopa County audit. Now, I'm sure there are, I've heard several reports of issues with ballot security. Paperwork not being in order, ballots not being secured properly. Tell me, what does that have to do with the Department of Justice? This is a state audit of a state election that was held, it's a state audit of a state election, how it was handled in a particular county of that state. This has nothing to do with the federal government, nothing whatsoever. But again, everybody looks to the feds. Everybody looks to Washington, D.C. You know, the Constitution says we're a union of free and independent states. But we don't act that way. We act like subjects of a kingdom out of Washington. We act like serfs. We don't stand up when they get too big for their britches. We don't stand up when they violate the law. We don't stand up when they curb our rights. We go begging to them to do it. Mayor Columbus and others in Ohio are begging the federal government to come infringe on their rights. If Congress is going to fund the DOJ to do things it's not legally allowed to do, it is the representatives of the people that must start that legislation. That's right. The people you hire are stealing your money to infringe on your rights. And you keep hiring them. How do I know? Because something like 90% of incumbents won in the last election. And that's kind of a 90 is about the average percentage of incumbents who retain their seat. These liars, these cheats, these thieves that we keep hiring. People keep looking for a fix in Washington. The fix to Washington is not in Washington. The fix to Washington is in your state house. And the fix to your state house is in your county elections. Federalism is the cure for what is ailing America. It's the cure, well, maybe not America. It's the cure for the mess that is Washington, D.C. Call it the swamp, call it the establishment, call it tyranny, call it whatever you want. The fix to Washington is in the hands of the American people. James Garfield said, "Now more than ever, the people are responsible for the character of their Congress. If that body be ignorant, reckless, and corrupt, it's because the people tolerate ignorance, recklessness, and corruption." And what's just as true for Congress is also true for your state legislature. It's our fault. And only we can fix it. But only if we stop trying to fix Washington, D.C. directly and we start fixing our counties and using that to fix our states. Because when the states stand up and they use the Constitution, they use federalism, they can stop what the federal government is doing. So please be sure to make AmericaOutloud.com your daily stop for the latest news and happenings. It's important that we all do our part, that we share the stories, the articles, the podcasts, the videos, and we help keep America secure. So please do that, be diligent, and join me again next time on the Constitution Study.
Stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.